Hi, welcome to this regular weekly edition of the NWI.com Political Roundtable for Thursday, September 11th, 2014. I'm Doug Ross, editorial page editor at The Times. Here with me, one of our other regulars, Krista Zivanovic, assistant managing editor. One of the things that's on everybody's mind in the region after Evan Bayh's speech yesterday is this former governor, former U.S. senator, is he going to run for governor again? What's he going to do? He said he'd decide by the end of the month.
And he has said very carefully he really himself personally is leaning against any more runs, but that people have, you know, encouraged him to do so. I asked him if he felt like maybe some people were sore at him for, in 2010, not running again for U.S. Senate. He was very disillusioned with the bipartisanship in Congress. At the time, their popularity level was 20%. Now it's descended to 14%. And he said he still felt like he was hearing from people that he had support if he were to run for something. I think that most people are expecting him to run for governor, but maybe he's going to announce a run for president. I was reading on a recent website, they were listing the 10 top contenders. I can't remember all of them, but among Hillary, Joe Biden, and others, Evan Bayh's name was mentioned. So who knows? It's up for grabs.
It is. When I listened to the speech yesterday, I was waiting for some kind of indication of, you know, is he going to run for governor, as, you know, has been widely speculated. And what came to me was he dealt with so many national issues. You know, he talked about building the economy, which of course has Indiana implications and so forth, but he talked about doing things on a national scale. And so that is very different from doing things on, you know, a state scale. Well, as we've seen with our incumbent governor, Mike Pence, you know, of course, everybody's speculating, is he going to run for president? Will he run for governor in 2016 when his term's up? So, you know, the question is, will Evan Bayh and Mike Pence go head-to-head in whatever capacity, whether they both run for governor, whether they both run for president, or will Bayh say, I'm just going to use my, I think he's got close to $10 million in campaign funds left over. Is he just going to use that to help some
others
of his candidates?
Right.
Exactly. Now, here's the scenario. He's an empty nester right now. He and his wife, Susan, sent the boys off to college, Harvard, I believe they're enrolled in this year. So, you know, they're college freshmen, both of those boys. And so that gives Evan a little bit more time. He said, you know, he can be a better friend because he's able to, you know, rather than taking care of the boys and spending time with them and so much, he's able to actually go out and travel more and all these things that you look forward to when your kids are grown and gone. So does that include tying himself down as governor or senator or president? I thought from his speech, he sounded more like he could be a good cabinet secretary. You know,
or a vice presidential candidate. Who knows?
Well, and that may be. You know, maybe he's just got to build the name recognition enough. Again, you know, he's been out of this for a few years. So maybe if he builds the name recognition nationally, then he is a good.
And it was certainly strategic of him to be a guest of Fox News the past few years. He's talking about a need to, you know, reinvigorate bipartisanship. And what better way than to present his moderate self on Fox News for a few years and reach that audience and those people. So he's, you know, He could be bring us some surprises. Who knows?
Well,
both he and the governor.
That's a very good point. Exactly. You know, we've seen a governor currently, Governor Pence, who's, you know, very much a states' rights person and doesn't seem all that willing to compromise on a number of nationally political issues that involve Indiana. So it will be interesting to see where that goes.
And that was a main theme of Bayh's speech yesterday, was compromise and how good it is and how important it is. And he even said we probably wouldn't have a constitution or a country had there not been great compromise, profound compromise. So
And he also, especially, you know, timely today on September 11, he made the case that, you know, in fighting terrorism, you know, this is where we definitely need to compromise. And, you know, not compromise with the terrorists, but compromise
unity,
within the
right.
country.
A
yeah,
sense
exactly.
of unification,
so we,
right.
Exactly. You know, we've got, you know, become so polarized. We've got to come together for this, you know, very, very important common goal. Speaking of coming together, we should talk about our next topic, the Camp Summit, the boot camp. In LaPorte County has been a really hot issue. Krista, you're probably the better one to bring us up to speed on that.
Well, actually, Scott Pilath, state rep, our House Minority Leader, announced on August 28th, he heard that the governor was going to shut it down. It's located in LaPorte. I think it has about 74 boys, and it's kind of the state's only paramilitary sort of, you know, boot camp for young men, and the governor wanted to send them all to Pendleton and close it down to, quote, save money. But when we all started digging, we found out that the statistics showed that perhaps Camp Pendleton is where, not where boys should be sent, but to Camp Summit in LaPorte. Their 2013 cost per inmate were $140 compared to about $290 at Pendleton, and their recidivist rate is much lower at 20% compared to 40% at Pendleton. And I think that the governor came out and sort of gently blamed the Department of Correction instead of himself when his own Republican Rep. Tom Dermody of LaPorte came out in unity with Scott Pilath, asking that the Camp Summit be saved. He said there are about 70 employees there. Many of them are veterans. And he thought that it was a really good thing that the state did to have this camp. They're not in a maximum prison. They have classes. They are given a lot of freedom and a lot of tough love. And we've interviewed some of the boys there, and they really seem to like it and be getting something out of it. So,
and we'll be having more in Sunday's paper in the forum section that tells you know what they're going through, and you know gives a little bit of the boys' perspective as well of how this is changing their lives. So,
and I thought it was interesting that the governor said he heard from DOC, which is the Department of Correction, that the utilization numbers were down. Well, partly the utilization numbers are down because the DOC probably has chosen not to send the boys there. I'm not quite sure how it works, but I don't think the boys send themselves there. So I think that was kind of a slightly hypocritical comment to make. But the governor did say that helping, especially young people, but all criminals change their ways was a subject very near and dear to his heart. So, you know, I think he probably still will close it. I could be wrong. I hope I'm wrong. But at least you got a reprieve, and we'll be thinking about it. And maybe instead of sending more boys to Pendleton, more boys from throughout the state should come to LaPorte to Camp Summit.
Or maybe there should be, you know, this program replicated elsewhere. You know, the idea that the recidivism is you know, half of that of you know, the Pendleton facility.
And at less cost
that tells
to
you,
do that.
Exactly.
Right.
That tells you a lot. So, you know, there's time for the governor, who's a very numbers-oriented guy, you know, very data-driven. There's time for him to look at this and make a decision that may overrule what the Department of Correction was leaning toward in the first place. So we'll see. There's plenty of time for that decision. There's plenty of time for another decision, and that's something that Glenda Ritz, the superintendent of public instruction, is pushing. She, you know, announced her budget that she is going to ask the General Assembly for next year. And in that is money that would eliminate the cost of textbook rentals in Indiana. Krista, you probably paid a bunch of that for your boys.
I did. My boys graduated in 9 and 11, 2011, and every fall for the both of them for the year, I would pay a grand total of between $400 and $6 every fall for books and supplies, which I personally found outrageous, but what are you going to do? And I know that we have done this since I was in high school in the 70s. We bought our own books. We didn't rent them. We bought everything, and it was quite pricey for families. So this is a tradition, at least in Northwest Indiana, if not the state.
Right. And, you know, here's Indiana law on this. School districts are authorized to charge 25% of the cost of the textbook in a rent each year for 6 years. So do the math, 25%. You know, you're getting 50% more by the
right.
end of this. And then after that, if the textbook is still in use, then they're able to charge 15% of the original purchase price. So they're, you know, easily making the cost of that book over time and you know, presumably making a profit. Now, you'd have, you know, some of the issues that with lost textbooks that you have to deal with and so forth. But that puts Indiana among really just a handful of states that have this provision. You've got and you know, not to the fees, not to the extent of Indiana, but the states that do allow charges for textbooks are Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, of course, Iowa, Kansas, South Carolina, and Utah. So, you know, a small number. It will be interesting to see if this goes through. Because this is something that's been talked about for a number of years and no action. B, I think the Republicans who have the supermajority currently are going to be really protective of that $2 billion plus surplus. And C, she's going to Ritz.
Right.
So there's the political standpoint
right.
there with
right.
the whole feud over, family feud, as it were, over education in Indiana. So we'll see how that goes. What do you think the chances are, Krista?
I think we're still going to be paying for our textbooks. I think that there is a whole viewpoint in Indiana. We have seen over the past 20 years, parents pay more and more for college education, for state university education here as well. And I think that the state legislature in Indiana, all across the country, but especially Indiana, I think it's been obscene the way they have defunded universities over the past two decades. And so I think we'll still be paying for textbooks in Indiana. Teachers can't even get enough money for basic supplies in their classrooms. Teachers have not had raises for several years, much like our county workers. I agree with you. I don't see the state giving up one penny of its surplus.
Or in this case, it'd be $70 million a year of that surplus. Or,
right.
you know, if they're going to, you know, reshuffle the taxes in some form, which, you know, is a pretty safe bet because they pretty much do every year. So we'll see how that goes. Well, I'm afraid that's all the time we have for this edition of the NWI.com Political Roundtable. In honor of 9/11, we encourage you to take a moment to pause and reflect on the meaning of those 9/11 attacks and the current war on terror with new threats even being addressed today, and reflect on what this means to be an American and what it means to try to maintain the peace. Thank you.